Welcome back, nerds, to another exciting adventure of Two Nerdy Dads, Episode 5. With me, as always, is Jason Applegate.
Hello, yes, Episode 5. We've cleared that up.
We did. I went back, looked at the tapes, and oh my goodness, we did miss one. There is Episode 4, and now we're on 5.
See, we're having so much fun that we don't really keep track of how many times. So.
Exactly. We need to count from Sesame Street. Keep me on track.
That's right.
So what do we have up first today, Jason?
Well, let's go ahead and go right to our questions and suggestions that we have from our listeners. Yeah. So we had one from Whitney who was wondering about going to Comic-Cons with kids. And she specifically had a question of when is the right age to sort of let your kids just go? Like, let them roam themselves and be free and do what they want to do. Which got me to thinking, you know, aside from that is what age is it okay to start bringing them to these Comic-Cons? Because I'm sure we have parents who have all – both of those questions. What's your thoughts on that, Jimmy? Either one of those you want to tackle.
I think it's a very timely question because you were just coming off of Motor City Comic-Con, yeah. And we just had Las Vegas, the amazing Las Vegas Comic-Con. We have San Diego Comic-Con coming up in August, and I think that's or end of July. And I think that sort of is a caveat to this. I think it depends on what the con is.
Exactly.
I would not take a child to San Diego Comic-Con for several reasons. One of them being it is just too crowded. It is so easy to get lost. I am that parent. Before I had kids, I never worried about, oh, my God, what's going on around me, blah, blah, blah. It was kind of freewheeling. Now that I have kids, it's like, you have to stay close to me. I will be holding if you can, if I can still hold you. I'm going to hold your hand. You're not going anywhere. You know, it's crazy when you see San Diego Comic-Con, and it's people upon people, and it's crazy. Not to mention, there is a lot of content that I don't think is appropriate, a lot of cosplay that's a little racy, a lot of comic books that are a little racy. You could go up the wrong aisle, and boom, there you are right in front of something you don't want to be in front of. So I think that, I'm probably being overprotective, but I would say 15, 16, 17, somewhere in there, maybe.
But, yeah, no, I hear what you're saying, especially about the different – that was exactly what I was going to say. It really depends on the con that you're going to. You hit on a huge point about the size of it, but also – and I think this is maybe is stating the obvious, but, like, you know, if you go to a sci-fi con or you go to a horror movie con, well, obviously, you know, you're looking at different things. But even a sci-fi one, you're going to probably see scarier things there. And we've always talked about you got to know your kids, and different kids are ready at different ages. But as far as bringing them with you, yeah, if it's a huge con like San Diego Comic-Con, the Comic-Con, maybe not at all. You know, you don't bring kids at all until they are able to sort of be independent and go on their own.
And that's a tough thing I've seen at San Diego Comic-Con. I know parents want to go, and they've got strollers for kids. I think that's inappropriate, too. It's like, it's crazy here. I don't think that's cool. That's more of a social moray versus a rule. But it's like, you know what? You're taking up room. Your poor little kid's probably getting trampled on because nobody's looking down. So,
oh, man. And you see that everywhere, right, where it's like, dude, just get a babysitter for your kids, you know? I can't tell you how many times I've gone to the movies and sat through a movie, you know, and I'm like, really? You brought your kids to see this, you know?
Yeah.
And it's rated R. You know, we're talking a rated R movie, and there's kids like 5 and stuff that are there. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, like, just – you know, get somebody to babysit or just wait till it comes out on DVD, man. But, hey, nobody's perfect and all that, but I hear what you're saying. There's nothing worse than getting hit in the back of the ankle, the old Achilles, with the shopping cart or the baby stroller, for sure.
Exactly.
I think size is – the size of the con is important. If you're looking at you know, a smaller one like the Motor City Comic Con, and you can speak as to the Vegas one. Again, to bring your kids to that, I think, you know, they should be able to walk on their own, in my opinion. Like, I saw some strollers there, and it's not that bad because those smaller cons aren't as crowded, so maybe it's not that big of a deal. But you still got to be careful of the content, you know. I remember, not so much this year, but last year when we went, there were a couple booths, artists' booths, that had art that was up that I was sort of like, okay, we're turning around now.
Yeah.
And making a quick U-turn and going down a different aisle because the content was pretty racy or horrific. And I didn't really want my small children seeing that. But I thought this year it wasn't as bad. I don't know if it just was luck or if they were more conscientious about that kind of a thing or what. But it wasn't as bad. And my kids are a little bit older, so that makes a difference too. As far as letting them, like, would I let them roam on their own in a smaller con? Probably, you know, my son's 10 now. I still probably wouldn't let him until he was about 13 or so. Basically, it's like, when do you think your kid is old enough not to be kidnapped?
Yeah, exactly.
It's such a scary, I mean, you don't know, man. Like, you got to keep your eye on your kids because you don't know who's there and what their intentions are. And it's a big place. Even the smaller cons, there's a lot of people there, and you could easily, you know, lose track of your kid. And you can easily, you know, something bad could happen. And that's the sad thing, especially in today's day and age, is you always have to think about worst possible scenarios.
Yeah, it is, because you can be, you know, 99% diligent, and that 1%, you never know. And
yeah.
As a parent, you are always, if something ever did happen, you are going to be guilt-ridden for the rest of your life. It's just not worth it, in my opinion. Not worth trying to take that risk just so they can go on their own and goof off. And I know that probably sounds awful to everybody out there. They're like, oh, my God, you're the worst dad ever. It's like, I don't care. I don't care. And now, like you said, my children are a little younger. I have an 8-year-old and a 5-year-old. No way are they walking anywhere by themselves in a con. But coming with a con, and that's what's great about cons these days, is they typically have family day or kids day.
That's what I was just going to ask, is if they had that for the Vegas one.
They did, and I think typically it's the last day of every con, seems to use that as a tradition. And it's perfect because, it's a marketing tool for the con, because usually everybody's seen everything they want to see, so there's no reason to go back. Okay, cool. Let's bring in people who haven't seen it yet. Those are typically the kids. So I think that's a great, great thing that most cons are doing.
Yeah, I agree. The family day is awesome. I know we've enjoyed it. It's always nice to see the kids' costume contests and things like that. Although, as a side note, I have to mention that the winners are usually, you know, the parents that made the costumes for the kids. It reminds me of, like, the classroom projects when you walk in and you're like, oh, yeah, obviously you didn't do that. Your dad did or your mom did or something like that. But it's still cool to see these kids fired up and geeked up about the things that you're excited about. And so would I let my kids go wandering around? I don't even know if I want to, because part of it is I want to enjoy what they're enjoying, you know. And I know my son's only 10. He probably doesn't want to go off on his own because he wants to show me the cool stuff that he sees. You know, and we can share that together. So I got to enjoy that while I have a chance, because in a few years, it probably will be like, Dad, just let me go by myself, man.
Exactly. You have a mandatory friend at this point.
That's right.
That's a great thing to have at a con. It's like, kid, you're staying with me.
Exactly.
But no, that's a great topic, and I hope we answered some of those questions out there. And again, if you have further questions, because you've never been to a con and you'd like to know more, do not hesitate to contact us at info@nerdlocker.com. Hit us up on Twitter @nerdlocker or on Facebook. We'd love to answer these questions.
Absolutely. And then the other question that I had was, again, from Doug, who was now asking about Hulk. He was interested in reading a Hulk comic book series of some kind, probably in trade paperback, and was asking, you know, where should he go? What should he start? World War Hulk, Planet Hulk, were the two that he sort of mentioned. And so I thought we'd kind of address that. I don't know how much of a Hulk reader you are. I know I don't read Hulk very often. I've read a couple of issues of each of Planet Hulk and World War Hulk, so I know a little bit about them.
Now this is for Doug, not for kids. This is for Doug himself.
This is for Doug himself. Yeah.
Okay.
This is just him being curious about that particular comic, so not to read to his kids. No.
Honest, it's not that I'm not a Hulk fan, but I've never really got into Hulk. I'm a Bill Bixby guy. I love the TV show. I think that was fabulous. I hated what Ang Lee did to the Hulk. Was very happy when he got resurrected with the Ed Norton version and now the Avengers version. But I'm sitting here thinking, I think the closest I've ever come to reading a Hulk book would be Old Man Logan or like Onslaught, which was an awful, don't read that, please, X-Men crossover thing. But yeah, I will definitely bow to your expertise. I'm not a Hulk.
Yeah, I don't have much expertise, unfortunately. Like you, I a little bit more, I guess. And I'm glad you mentioned Old Man Logan, because the reason he asked that question was he went and checked out Old Man Logan after we had praised it, because he had heard some negative things about it, which I'm like, really?
What?
Yeah, that's what he said. So
they couldn't read. They can only see the picture. That's weird.
I don't know. You know, people like what they like, man, and don't like what they don't like. Especially when it comes to comics and movies and stuff. It's pretty crazy. But
it's probably Stan Lee. He was jealous he didn't write it.
Must be. So I read a couple of issues of the Planet Hulk. I thought it was a great concept. Launch Hulk into space, right? I mean, here's this guy, he's uncontrollable, he causes all this damage. You have this sort of Illuminati of these leaders that come together. I can't remember everybody. I think it was Professor Xavier, Doctor Strange, Reed Richards, Tony Stark, you know, all these sort of like head honchos of each of their individual groups. And they all decide that they're going to do this. That they need to. This is the only way to do it. So they launch Bruce Banner into space to just get rid of him. What a crazy idea. And then, of course, something happens and he crashes on a planet, which wasn't the intention of what was supposed to happen. And it's this gladiator planet, basically, where he he becomes a gladiator on the planet and then ends up, through the storyline, you know, overthrowing the dictator there and forming these bonds and relationships. And like I said, I didn't read the entire series, but to me, Hulk is good when you set him, like in Avengers, where he can just womp on things. You know, you just have him Hulk out and then just go to town. That's what makes Hulk good. And that's why you didn't like the Ang Lee version, and most people didn't. I am one of them. Not a huge fan of it, because there wasn't enough smashing. I mean, it's Hulk smash. Let's just get to the smashing of it. So if that's what you want to see, that's definitely a good storyline where you could see that. It ends, if I remember, it's got a really interesting ending, too, where, like, I think the planet ends up getting blown up, which leads to World War Hulk, where Hulk makes his way back to Earth, and now he's ticked at the people that sent him into space, and he's going to exact his revenge. So it's really Hulk as a villain. He sets up his own sort of gladiator realm. And I do not remember if I finished the series or not. If I did, then I don't remember exactly how it ended. I remember Doctor Strange was a big part of it, though.
And he had to
do some messed up stuff. Yeah, he was a cool character in the whole sequence. And I think they brought Supreme back in there, too, because he was, you know, he's basically Marvel's Superman, except he's schizophrenic or something. So those are both good series, too, where you really get to see a lot of smashing. And then, of course, I heard good things but did not actually read it myself about Indestructible Hulk, which was by Mark Waid. And that I heard was really good. Again, I haven't read much of it. I know eventually he becomes in that series an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. And so because he wants to do some good with the Hulk persona, so Banner becomes an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. And then somewhere in there, S.H.I.E.L.D. kind of betrays him or something like that. I'm not sure. Like I said, I haven't read it, but I heard good things about it. On a side note, Marvel, Indestructible Hulk, like, what's with the adjectives with Marvel, right? I mean, you've got Uncanny X-Men, Astonishing X-Men, All New X-Men, Amazing X-Men. Look, just, like, leave it just the Incredible Hulk. Why does it have to be the Indestructible Hulk? It just, I don't get that. But anyway, now it's just Hulk, which just started. And so my suggestion really to Doug is, look, dude, go back and get issues 1, 2, 3, and 4. There's only 4 issues so far of Hulk. That's it. No Incredible, no Indestructible. It's just Hulk. And I believe it picks up where Indestructible left off, which I think only went to 20 issues.
Awesome.
And it starts with the first issue is Who Shot the Hulk? And Hulk's been, I guess Bruce Banner was shot in the back of the head. And so really what's going on with him now is Bruce Banner has this kind of brain damage that he's sort of working through. And S.H.I.E.L.D.'s trying to protect him, and somebody's obviously after him. So it seems pretty good. I've been reading that one for the first 4 issues. So then you only have to pay, you know, a couple bucks each issue, and you can kind of keep right up with it. But if you're going with the trade paperback, maybe the other options I mentioned before would be good ones.
Very cool. Very cool. I think the only thing I can add to that is it's a Hulk ripoff, as Image did in the 90s. I really enjoyed this book. It was so sporadic. I don't even know where it left off, but Pitt. I really enjoyed Pitt. I don't know if you remember that one.
I do remember that one, yeah.
It was about a little boy, and it was almost like Shazam, but it was, if I remember correctly, it was about a little boy and his buddy, superhero guy, was essentially Hulk, but it was a gray-skinned dude named Pitt.
Yeah. Yeah, and he would grow into him when he needed to, kind of a thing. Is that what it was? I remember seeing it.
Yeah, it was really good, but it was clear ripoff of the Hulk, but it was really good. But that's literally all I can add to that discussion.
Well, maybe that's something though that he could check out that otherwise would not have, and we're going to make some recommendations a little bit later too. So
yeah,
cool, excellent. All right, well that's our questions. What do we got next?
Next up, we've got, do you want to talk a little bit about one of your favorite characters celebrating the 25th anniversary?
Yeah, this is the 75th anniversary for Batman's creation.
Yeah.
I guess July 23rd is Batman Day. I just found that out. And when I was listening, I know, right? It's hard to imagine, 75 years. Not as old as Superman yet, though, nor will he ever be. So,
That's true.
But... yeah, pretty exciting stuff. So this, but today, actually, when we're recording this on Monday the 23rd, is the 25 years, right?
25
years.
We're old, dude.
25 years. I know, right? Since Batman, the Tim Burton version, released in 1989. Today was the day that it came out, 25 years ago. So I just wanted to sort of touch on that because that really marked for me my venturing into the comic book nerd world was the 1989 Batman. Now I watched Super Friends and Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends and all that stuff in the 80s when I was a kid growing up. But that 89, when I saw that Batman movie, I was like, this is for me. And that's when I became a huge Batman fan. And ever since have been. And of course, the animated series afterwards chimed into that. But it really all started with the 89 Batman, which was huge for its time. Really, you don't have – if you're a fan of any comic book movie today or in the last 10 years – you owe it to 1989's Batman, because before that, superhero movies were pretty much campy. I mean, I guess you kind of have the Superman movie, Superman and Superman 2, but even those were pretty campy. And Tim Burton's Batman really took it to a gritty, dark place, which was, that was the late 80s and early 90s in comic books, too, when you had, you know, Frank Miller's Batman, you know, Year One and The Dark Knight Returns and all that stuff. So it was pretty hardcore, so much so that when The Dark Knight came out and there was going to be another Joker, you know, I was skeptical because I was like, Jack Nicholson is the Joker, man. Like, that guy was so creepy, and he captured that character so well. But then it just goes to show you, hey, there's different interpretations of characters that can be just as good. And I don't think Nicholson's Joker is any less of a Joker than Heath Ledger's is. They're just different Jokers, and they both capture an essential aspect of that character. So, love that movie. Was excited to hear that today was its birthday, but 25 years? Man, that makes you feel old.
I like how you've been talking about your little jab in on the guy who's afraid of the Green Rock. Good call, man.
Anytime I can dig on Superman, I'll take that shot.
Well, it's funny because, you know, we kind of saw a little bit of that when people were like, oh, you know, there's no way Christian Bale can play Batman and all that when it was Batman Begins. Yeah. But, you know, you set the Wayback Machine and you're like, 1989, we got sneak peeks of Michael Keaton and Jack Nicholson playing their roles. But before that, I mean, we had the TV show. That's what we were coming off of.
Right.
So we were really like, well, what's it going to be? What's the tone going to be? It's Tim Burton who,
yeah.
And let's not forget, he's coming off of Pee-wee's Big Adventure and Pee-wee's Playhouse and all that stuff, his movies. So it's not like Tim Burton was established. Oh, he did have Beetlejuice, but he wasn't established like he is now. So it was like, almost like Christopher Nolan. Can he handle it? We didn't know.
Yeah.
So when you go in the theater and you see this really dark Batman, and it's serious, and Michael Keaton, I know people rip on him, and it's like, dude, he took it from what Adam West had created, which is not necessarily bad, but like you said with the Joker, it's just completely different. And he made it Batman. It was now Batman. It was no longer a joke. It was Batman. And I always will consider Michael Keaton, much like I do Christopher Reeve, he is Batman to me. And I don't, I'm not in Christian Bale or whoever's going to play it next. But, I mean, Ben Affleck and whoever's after that. But I still look at that first one, 1989, and like, yeah, that's Batman to me.
Yeah, and it's sort of like whatever you grow up with, that's what you're going to love anyway, you know? You look at Doctor Who is a great example of that, and some people love the 10th or the 11th or the 9th or whatever. It just sort of depends on, well, who was the Doctor when you were first started watching it? And I think Batman can be that as well. I agree with you. I think Michael Keaton was great. I really liked his Bruce Wayne. I thought he's really the only one who's portrayed a Bruce Wayne. He had that kind of edge to him where he was just crazy enough that you're like, yeah, this guy could totally put on this rubber suit and go around beating people up. But I remember as kids, I'm sure you did this too. We all reenacted the holding the bad guy over the edge of the building and you say, I'm Batman, you know? And then it wasn't the Christian Bale voice. It was just, I'm Batman. And we all did that.
And what a great opening. Who are you, man?
Yeah.
It's like, awesome.
Yep.
Amazing. Yeah. Yep. It
sure was.
It's hard to believe. 25 years ago. The follow-ups just didn't do anything for me as far as what that first one did. It was just so good.
Yeah. I mean, we're not even going to speak about the last two. certainly not the last one. But Burton's even Batman Returns just wasn't quite as good. I think Catwoman was fantastic. I love Michelle Pfeiffer as Catwoman. I still think she probably is still the best Catwoman. I really enjoyed that, but I did not care at all for the Penguin in that.
No, in that series.
And then of course it really started to pave the way again for the campiness that we saw in Forever and Batman and Robin. which with the finale of that, where you had these penguins that were going to launch missiles and blow up Gotham City, and you're just like, really? But Christopher Walken, you got to give a little bit of props.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Anytime you can see Christopher Walken, like, sign me up. I'll be there.
Bruce Wayne, what are you doing?
Yeah, he's great. So anyway, that's my thoughts. That's at the core of my nerdiness is the 1989 Batman. In fact, so much so that a lot of times I try to figure that's my timetable. Like, well, that was what, 2 years after Batman came out, so that must have been 1991.
Yeah,
that's how I sort of measure in my timeline where things are. That's how big of a movie that was for me.
And I don't remember which one it was, because like you said, they were forgettable. But I remember the sequels came out in high school, and I can't remember which one it went to. And it had become more of a tradition than something we actually looked forward to. But that kicked it off. We went to the theater and saw the not-so-good sequel.
Yeah. Yeah.
And,
no,
it was an event only because of that first one.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's really what it was, and we were excited about it and kind of expected, I think at the time, for it to be more in the vein of the first two, and we're really sort of surprised. I don't know why we should have been surprised, because Jim Carrey was in it, so
yeah.
It's like we should have known where it was going. And there's nothing against, I love the 60s Batman, but it is what it is, you know?
Yeah.
You admire that like you admire watching the old Godzilla movies that I've been watching with my son. Like, you admire it for what it was in the time in which it was. And if you try to sort of view that today, it doesn't stand up, and it just isn't right for our culture. But
yeah,
for the 1960s, it's great. Adam West as Batman, there's nothing funnier than when he's running around with that huge bomb, and he's trying to find a place to throw it, and there's nuns, and there's baby ducks, and there's all kinds. He can't get rid of it. He's like, some days you just can't get rid of a bomb. I mean, that's just hilarious. That they knew what they were doing. You know, they're purposefully being absurd, ridiculous.
Exactly.
So you got to appreciate that, too. But, yeah, awesome.
So from one of the most iconic superheroes, let's take a little turn and talk about some non-superhero comics.
Yeah, that was another question and sort of suggestion that we had from some of our listeners was, hey, what about some other comics besides superheroes? So we talked a little bit about that. We had at least mentioned some last week that we were interested in. The one that I wanted to talk about is called Hinterkind, which is a book by Vertigo. If you have read Fables, which I love Fables, I wish I was caught up with Fables. I've been reading the trade paperbacks, but it's fantastic. If you are a fan of Once Upon a Time, the TV series, you won't be after you read Fables, because Fables is like 10 times better than Once Upon a Time. And so you read Fables and you'll be like, oh yeah, Once Upon a Time is really crappy. And it is a literal ripoff of Fables. And it's great. And the reason I mention Fables is that Hinterkind is similar to that. It has a similar feel to that. It mixes fantasy with reality. You have these very real characters. But what it is it's a post-apocalyptic storyline where some sort of event has happened. I don't know if they ever clearly say what it is, but basically most of humanity is wiped out. Cities are sort of overgrown with jungles and things like that. And you have these small colonies of people that have survived. And what they end up finding out is that there are these mythical creatures that have sort of resurfaced now that mankind has been reduced to such small numbers. And so you find out that they sort of had gone underground and sort of disappeared when humanity had – almost like humanity had run them almost near to extinction. And so they had kind of gone away into hiding. But now that humanity is decimated, they've sort of come back. And so you've got this interesting dynamic where you have these – some of them are like hunting human beings and eating them or, you know, trying to wipe them out completely. and others are sort of trying to help them. It's really pretty interesting. The main character, you have these two people that are basically on a journey to sort of find some answers. And it's too complicated to get too much into it. But one of them has discovered he's growing a tail. So you don't know what's up with him. Is he one of these fairy tale kinds of characters that has, you know, sort of started to turn? Or is he some sort of a hybrid, you know? I don't know. They haven't answered that yet. But I think it's cool. It's very well written. It's by Ian Edginton and Francesco Trifogli, I think is how you pronounce that. And it is currently in issue number 7. So if you haven't had a chance to get it, I know its first trade paperback is out, and then you can catch up on the couple of issues that are probably at your local comic book store just in the boxes by now.
That's very cool.
Yeah, it is cool. How about you?
I've been a big fan of Valiant and their relaunch. One of my favorite comics, as you know, back in the 90s was Quantum and Woody. And that's borderline superhero. They're more like bumbling fools because they have powers, but they don't know what to do with them. But I don't even want to tell the edge. I want to go through non-superhero. So I will go with Archer and Armstrong. It's a great story that Armstrong is essentially an immortal. He's thousands of years old, back in the time of Egypt, in that he was around when, I don't remember the name of the device that they were doing, but it had, you know, sort of magical powers, and his brother accidentally set it off and blew it up, and him and his two brothers became immortal because of it. And now, since that time, secret sects have grown to try and find this almost like Holy Grail to, so that they can have the power. And Armstrong's main job is to prevent, not job, but he takes it upon himself to prevent anybody from getting it again. Armstrong comes into it in that sort of present day. I'm sorry, Archer comes into it present day. He was raised by one of these sects, and they are uber religious, but you find out it's not that the brainwashing they're doing to these children that they're adopting is not to further religion, it's to further this goal of getting this ultimate weapon, so to speak. So at first you're like, oh my God, they're painting religion in a bad light. It's like, no, that has nothing to do with religion. They're just trying to brainwash their kids so they can go and get this. And it's just a great mix of history, action, comedy. Fred Van Lent writes it. I apologize. I don't remember who does the artwork on it. But I am constantly amazed at Fred's knowledge of history. I'm a history major, so I know a lot of it is quasi-accurate. I know there's a lot of fiction in there, but he's using a lot of real things mixed in with this fiction. And it's, I want to say they're on about issue 22 right now. And I highly recommend, I think there's been about 24 because they've done the zero thing a couple times. But I highly recommend you pick it up. It's a great story. I'm pretty sure they have a trade of it so you can catch up. You don't have to go buy them all. But that's exactly what I would do. I would pick this up because it's a great, great story. As a second one, I would say, and you and I have talked about this, is from Image, Lazarus.
Mm-hmm.
It's been intermittent. I think it's Greg Rucka who does the writing.
Yeah, yes.
It's been a while since we've seen an issue, I believe, unless I just missed it. But that
no, it's, you're right.
It's been some great storytelling.
Yes, I love that series for a variety of reasons. One, I love the protagonist. You have a strong female character.
Yes.
Who is, she's the Lazarus, which basically each of these families have their own sort of like, what would you call it? Like a bodyguard, kind of like a heavy, like a, just this like, and they're sort of superhuman. They're
yeah.
kind of like,
engineer,
genetically all, yes, engineer, good. And
I would almost,
you know,
say samurai, because that they're protecting the family.
Dude, you hit it right on the head. That's exactly what they are. They're a samurai. They're this sort of you know, awesome warrior that protects the family and can and has to do the dirty work. And what you have is you have these families that, again, some post-apocalyptic event has happened, which seems to be a pretty common theme, just because it makes, I think it makes for interesting plots, but where you have different families that are in control of these territories and their interactions. And then you have family corruption from within, and you have the main character, you know, questioning, you know, her morality of, you know, what is she doing and is it right? And is she really one of the family or are they just using her? And I just think you're exactly right. It's really well written.
And she is surrounded by some shady family members.
Yes. It's very, in that regard, it's very Game of Thrones, where you have these sort of despicable kinds of characters, and you're just like, oh, you just love to kind of despise them.
Yeah.
And it's got kind of a Godfather feel to it as well, you know, this sort of mafioso kind of a thing going on. I'm glad you mentioned the second one, because when you were talking about Archer and Armstrong, it reminded me of Five Ghosts, which is by Image, and that one I really like because it's got these literary references where you have this character who has this gem that had blown up and it got into his chest, and these gems have the powers of these fictional characters within them. So he has the powers of, I'm not going to get all of them, but Sherlock Holmes, Merlin, Dracula, Robin Hood, and then the fifth one is a samurai, and I can't remember his name. But he can call on those powers and all of a sudden become like an expert marksman or a detective, and he can invoke those. The only one he barely ever calls on is Dracula because he loses control. It's sort of a Hulk kind of thing.
Yeah.
So that's really good, and it has a sort of Pulp Fiction feel, not the Tarantino movie, but the old magazines that have this sort of adventure kind of a – what's a good example of that? Not Flash Gordon because that's sci-fi, but, sort of a piratey kind of adventure comic feel to them. And the art is really unique. And that's something I like in comics because – I don't know about you, but I'm kind of tired of the Jim Lee, like, copy-paste stuff. I mean, there's so much Jim Lee-style art out there that it's nice to see stuff that's not like that.
Yeah, that's one of the unfortunate things of really getting into comics in the 90s, is there are so many people that did, and now they imitate that style, and it gets old. I agree.
Yeah.
I did want to touch on a couple comics that were, I don't want to say obscure, but maybe fringe nerds who are just kind of want to dabble into it. And one of them is Ghostbusters. I think that comic book is awesome. It right now is in a storyline called Mass Hysteria, which is picking up from the events of or things that had happened in the first movie. It's got more characters in it because it's had. God, was it? Did they just celebrate like 30 years? I think they did. They're celebrating 30 years this year, so they have a lot more characters now. But they are picking up with the same similar events. Where you have Dana Barrett, you have Lewis Tully, you have basically the four main Ghostbusters, and they just pick up in New York City, getting their butts kicked, kind of. And that book is just fun. A lot of nostalgia with it. And similar to that, kind of playing off the movies, there are two Terminator comic books out right now. One is by J. Michael Straczynski, which, man, that guy can write. He is amazing. Highly recommend you pick that one up. And it escapes me who writes the other one, but it is just as good. I thought it was starting slow, but it really took a turn and was like, man, that's an amazing book. So I would highly recommend Terminator and Ghostbusters. I believe Ghostbusters is IDW, and Terminator is Dark Horse.
Yeah, that sounds – I would never have thought to pick those up. I've never been a person that reads the comics of a TV show or of a movie. I don't know why. I just have never sought out to do that, but sounds like those are pretty cool.
Yeah, I can't remember. I think it was just one week – the comic reviews were slim pickings, end of the month sort of thing. So I picked up Ghostbusters, number 6. And I was like, wow, this is a lot of fun because it's written almost like the cartoon, but it's using a lot of the characters from the movie, obviously. And then once Harold Ramis died, it was like, oh man, I got to read this now because this is this is the only place Egon's going to live. So it really, really is good. And then with the Terminators, one focuses on one story, the J. Michael Straczynski line, focuses on the events that took place essentially with Salvation and how Terminator Salvation and how they originally sent the first Terminator back in time. And the other one, I want to say it's written by Dan Jurgens, but I might be wrong, so don't quote me on that. It takes place in 1984 when the first Terminator was, except this is a different Terminator. You don't have Kyle Reese. You've got essentially more chaos, and we don't exactly know what they're after and why. And you have a sort of kicked out CIA agent trying to save the day.
Cool.
So it's I highly recommend you pick them up. Highly recommend if you're looking for non-superhero stuff.
Yeah, that sounds really good. In fact, you know, the more we're talking about it, I just thought of like two other ones, and I'm like, yeah, but we should really move on. But maybe we make this something a regular of, here's our non-superhero comic of the week that we suggest. So we'll look at
most
doing that.
Definitely. While we're going along those lines, why don't we talk about our little new segment, Adults Only?
Yeah, our Adults Only. We had another suggestion from a listener that of what would you suggest, you know, can you make suggestions for parents to have the adults, not to read with your kids or not to share with your kids, but just the adults. So I thought, let's call this the Nerd Cave, which is a spinoff of the Man Cave, you know, just some time to just, you know, yourself, kids are in bed, and you can turn this on Netflix or bust out this comic book or whatever. And so we'll start with that. And I'll go ahead and start off with it.
Sure.
Me, it would be, because this ties into another book that's non-superhero, a book called Caliban, which is by Avatar, and it's written by Garth Ennis. Is it Ennis or Enis? How do you pronounce his name?
I've always heard Ennis, but I will not stand up and
fight
for
right.
that.
It's got to
no
be Ennis, because Enis just rhymes with something that would totally, he would have been made fun of his entire life. So he would have at some point changed it to Ennis, even if it was.
Exactly.
So we're going to go with Ennis. And by the way, I am the worst person at names. I mispronounce names all the time. I will refuse to ever, you know, do a graduation ceremony where you have to read off people's names, because I will butcher them all the time. But Caliban is, it's cool. It's basically, it has an alien feel to it, the movie Alien. And you have this, basically this ship that's traveling, and it has this crew that sort of, you can tell some of them get along, some of them don't. They seem fairly disgruntled, like they've been on this ship for a long time. And they come out of warp, and what's happened is they've warped into another vehicle, another ship, an alien ship. Yeah. So they're sort of like the two ships are merged. And so it's super violent. You have, you know, in the first issue, obviously what it did is it, you know, when these two ships merged, you also had people that were halfway in between. And so then they're like, you know, in half. And, yeah, pieces and stuff like that. And it's only in its third issue. So if you can find a copy, because I'm sure it's pretty limited in print, if you can, I bet you could ask your comic book proprietor to order it for you. It's Caliban, and it's by Garth Ennis. And it's pretty dark, but it's well-written, and it definitely, if you're a fan of the Alien movies, it has that sort of a, you know, sci-fi horror feel to it.
That's awesome. That's very
cool. What's your suggestion?
Well, it's not new by any stretch of the imagination. Last week, well, I guess it was right before Father's Day, we had like the trifecta of awesomeness. And I'm referring to, my birthday was June 11th. We had Friday the 13th, which is one of my favorite holidays. I don't care if you say it's not a holiday, it's a holiday. And then we had Father's Day. So it was awesome. And on every Friday the 13th, and I'll give you a little information, my wife hates horror films. She tolerates zombie flicks, but she hates slasher films, which are my personal favorite. Every Friday the 13th, I make her watch a Friday the 13th. And I know these movies are not good. I know that. But I still love them for some reason. And I'm just amazed at the mythology of Jason Voorhees. And I love the fact that it started off with a movie that really didn't even have him in it in the first one.
Yeah.
It was just a really dumb, cheesy, typical at the time. There's several of them out at that time. Camp movie where kids get killed and you have a female serial killer, which is sort of the twist in there, I guess. And that really, the franchise picked up with number two when you had a dude with a burlap sack on his head going around killing people. And that was Jason. And from that point on, it became Jason Voorhees and number three with his hockey mask. And I don't know why I love these films. I know they're stupid. I went to film school. I know they were made very poor and bad budget. I know all of this. Yet Friday the 13th comes around. Jimmy is sitting down watching one of those movies. This time it was number four. It was supposedly the final chapter, which we all know is not even close. But it was the one that starred Corey Feldman. And it, to me, is one of the best. I love it. It also has Crispin Glover in it, which is a nice little trivia fact that not many people know. It's silly, ridiculous, but it's good. I love Friday the 13th.
Yeah, sometimes movies like that are so bad they're good. The one that comes to my mind that falls in that is the Flash Gordon movie, which I think we talked about in an episode before. It's just so bad, it's fun to watch.
Exactly.
But yeah, I hear you. My wife is not a fan of horror films at all, so I don't watch them that much. But if you get a chance in the Nerd Cave, and we do want to make sure we call it the Nerd Cave because I'm sure we do have female audience members, so we don't want to exclude them, even though it's called Two Nerdy Dads. We are two nerdy parents, you know, so we want to make sure we cover all the bases. So, cool. Well, that's a good suggestion. Should we move on to, you sent me a little link, one of those funny little links that lists off, 43 different reasons of blah, blah, blah. And this one was 43 facts you probably didn't know about 80s cartoons. So I looked at that, found it incredibly amusing. Definitely learned some things, definitely saw some things on there that I was like, yep, I knew that. So what was one that sort of stood out to you? Because we're not going to go over all 43 by any means.
Honestly, the main feel I got from it was just the nostalgia of things I had forgotten that even existed.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
I mean, the Transformers. I had Transformers, but I guess it was just the specifics of the Transformers that I was like, oh, my gosh, I'd completely forgotten Transformers. I like the
Transformers. Yeah. Yeah, well, and the one that cracked me up was in Japan, the name of the series was called Fight Super Robot Life Form Transformers. I thought, what a sort of almost stereotypical Japanese title, right, where they elongate it and add exclamation points. Fight Super Robot Life Form Transformers. That's just awesome. Just awesome.
Exactly. And that, I think it was Transformers that, was it they made the toy before the cartoon even existed?
Well, that seemed to be a theme. That's what I was going to get to, is like, seemed like a lot of the cartoons that came out in the 80s were because they wanted to sell action figures.
Yes.
And Transformers was one of them. Who was it? Who bought the rights to that? Was that Hasbro that owns Transformers?
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah. So when they bought the rights to these Japanese toys, which I guess it was two different toy lines, and then they just combined them into one. And then call them Transformers. You had He-Man, which was, those were toys before they made the series. And pretty much every single one after that, you had that same kind of thing. The thing I thought was interesting about the He-Man toys was that Mattel had passed on doing Star Wars. And that's why they came up with He-Man. and made those toys. What a huge, huge mistake. Can you imagine passing up on the Star Wars toy line? What? That's just mind-boggling. What, they have to look back on that and think, wow, we blew it there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you even look at it, Kenner was the one that got it, and Kenner was not prepared for the popularity of Star Wars.
No. But apparently He-Man, it filled a void because it became popular, and then they had the cartoon come out, and then everybody kind of followed suit as well and said, hey, this is a formula. Let's make some toys, and then let's do a cartoon of it, and then the toys will sell. And they did.
And you look at ones that failed. I remember a cartoon called Mask, which I love the cartoon. I vaguely remember toys, but that one did not hit it off. It failed.
There were a lot that failed. Another one I thought that was interesting that was totally 80s. So if you're an 80s fan, go back for nostalgia and look at it. If you weren't born in the 80s, but you want to look, you kind of love things that are 80s, it's great. Gem. Gem was the answer to Barbie. It was like, hey, let's sell a doll and let's try to compete with Barbie here and go a different direction. And so they created this sort of pop singer Gem. And some of the other things that stood out to me on that list of 43 was Gem dealt with some pretty mature topics where her mom dies in a plane crash and she had told, just told her mom off. I actually watched a little clip of it. And it was like she basically tells her mom that she's mad at her for having to leave or whatever. And so they leave on bad terms and she ends up dying in the plane crash and they show the wreckage and everything. And I don't know if, but that's pretty edgy for the 1980s. Some of our listeners might not realize that, but people didn't die in cartoons. I mean, go back and watch the Super Friends. Go back and watch Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. And there was hardly any cartoon violence at all. Like Superman doesn't punch anybody. Batman doesn't punch anybody in the Super Friends. They like pick up a cage and put it over them or rope them up in the bat rope or whatever. They don't ever fight. Spider-Man just webs people up. He never punches the Green Goblin.
Yep.
Go back and watch that and I think you'll pick up on it. And so cartoons have certainly changed since then, but I was surprised to see that Gem had dealt with that and you don't see a dead person or anything, but it certainly, is super obvious what happened. So I thought
That is surprising.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Those are the things that stood out to me. Anything else about the 80s as you were looking through that trip back in memory lane that stood out to you, good or bad?
Definitely DuckTales, Gummy Bears. what was the other one? Tailspin. Yeah, I clearly was Darkwing Duck. I think that was a little later, though. But, yeah, I clearly was influenced by Disney at that point.
Yeah, they kind of had, like, a whole 2 or 3 hours after school was out where they had all those cartoons kind of run back to back, if I remember right.
Yeah.
I didn't really get huge into those except for Darkwing Duck because of my Batman thing, and I think you're right. I think it was a little bit later or at least along the same time. But the other one that cracked me up seeing the picture of was the real Ghostbusters, which I guess they had to call them the real Ghostbusters because there already was the Ghostbusters that had the rights to that title. And I was looking at the picture, and if I was Dan Aykroyd, I'd be ticked because they really make him look like a fat doofus.
Yes.
And he's got red hair, and what's with blonde hair for what's his name, the tall guy? I'm so bad with names. Here I go again. Every podcast I have to not know.
Which one? Egon?
Yes, Egon. He's blonde, like platinum blonde. It's just like, did they feel like they had to appeal to all hair colors or something? it just didn't quite get that. But I remember watching that a little bit, but not tons. I don't think my parents let me watch that very much for one reason or another. But... yeah, I don't know. Anything else stand out to you besides the Disney stuff? bad stuff.
Oh, yeah. I think that was the other story. There was some good and there was a lot of bad.
Like Muppet Babies. The Woozles. The Woozles. I'm trying to – there wasn't a picture of that. I'm trying to remember what that was. Do you remember what the Woozles was?
I don't at all.
I want to say, I've probably just repressed this from my memory because it was so awful. And the fact that they had on there was that it was the shortest running Disney series. Because it must have been awful. I think it was like they were sort of a Care Bears kind of ripoff thing. Like they were these little stuffed things that... Did they roll up into a ball, I want to say?
I don't know. You got me, man.
Yeah, exactly.
Now that you say it, that was Droids and Ewoks, the cartoons, and they were awful.
Right?
They were awful.
They were just some bad ones. So bad that obviously we have erased them from our memories.
As I like to say, eternal spotlight of the sunshine, whatever that is.
Eternal sunshine of the spotless mind.
Yep, where he just erases that. Exactly, so.
Yes.
Please. All right, moving on. What do we got?
Well, let's see. I think we've covered everything that was on the docket, so we can go on to our parenting wins and parenting fails this week.
Excellent.
So let's start with the fails. Let's get those out of the way and finish with the good stuff. So you want to start or you want me to?
I'll go ahead and start. I've got a... reach back a little bit when James was quite a bit younger. I think he was probably about two at the oldest. And it's this horrible thing where your children are funny, but there's a point where it could be dangerous. James had this little bouncy horse zebra thing that had music, and it was pretty cool, and he loved it. And his legs weren't quite long enough to reach the floor as he would bounce on it. And this particular instance, I don't know how the zebra got near the wall where the TV was, but he was bouncing on it. And he literally lost his footing because he was tippy-toe and rolled off the back and sort of got wedged between the zebra and the wall. And it was this instant where you can see where America's Funniest Videos, where the dad clearly should have done something to get to the son, or the daughter, but rather fix it instead. Now, there's no video of it. There's no video of it, but in my mind, I'm sitting there watching it, laughing, and then I realized, oh, my God, I better check on my son to make sure he's okay. Yeah, that was I'm going to use that as my parenting fail this week.
That is too funny. You know, what's really funny is that we didn't talk about these ahead of time, and I do hope that our listeners appreciate that we're sharing these, embarrassing moments, and we're really doing this because we want to hear yours. Can you please help us feel better? But we don't talk about them ahead of time, and I have a similar sort of like accident kind of story, although I didn't laugh at mine. It was actually pretty shocking. We were at... I'm reaching way back to Cade was probably, my son was probably three, and my daughter was an infant, like 6 months, maybe nine. And this is one of the first times when I was out, just me, just dad, with the two of them. You know, I got this, I can handle this. And we were hanging at the mall, and we got Burger King, and Cade was just starting to get potty trained. So, of course, after I've ordered our food, he tells me, Daddy, I have to go to the bathroom. And I'm like, great.
Yes.
Yeah, perfect timing, right?
Never
so
finished.
I already have Sabrina in her high chair, the Burger King high chairs, right? And this is in the mall food court. So I'm like, okay, I can just wheel her in this high chair over to the bathroom. So I do. We wheel over there. And I'm helping Kate to get in. And I've left Sabrina just out of reach behind me to help him close the door. And just as I go to help him close the door, out of the corner of my eye, I see her high chair tipping forward.
Oh, man.
Yes. Slow motion, like, no! And I turn, and I'm trying, you wish you had, like, spider sense or super speed or something because you could just catch her. But it was just one of those things where, like, time was not on my side. And just face plant right on the floor. You sweep her right up, and you're just like, oh my gosh, are you okay? And she's crying, and her lips are bleeding, and I'm just like, oh my gosh, worst parent ever. And meanwhile, I gotta wait for Kate to finish his business.
Yeah.
And so I'm trying to comfort her, and so needless to say, we did not have Burger King. We just left. and I was walking through the mall as briskly as possible, carrying Cade behind me with blood all over my shirt from my poor daughter's lip. Thankfully, no permanent damage done, no teeth that were lost, no stitches needed, just a fat lip.
Good.
But, oh, my gosh, one of those moments where you're just like, how did that happen? How did that happen? I thought everything was fine. I was the big dad, taking care of the two kids, no problem. And nope. So that's my parenting fail.
That's a tough one, man.
Yeah.
That was a tough one. Yikes. Well, what's the win then? We got to hear the good one.
Yes, the parenting win. The parenting win for me is really a group parenting win in that we, between myself, my wife, and the grandparents, saw 5 productions of The Little Mermaid, in which my son was in that as King Neptune.
Awesome.
Ariel's father, although it's not it wasn't the Disney version, so it's King Neptune in this version, and Ariel was an enemy in this version. But anyway, so we saw 5 of those, 2 dance recitals that my daughter was in, and then we took the kids to see The Wizard of Oz. So all in all, you're talking 8 theatrical, kid-centered productions between the parenting network, if you will. So that was my parenting win this week. How about you?
Well, mine, I'm actually stealing from somebody. It's not mine, personal. I saw a video online that I thought was really amazing and touching. I wish I could give it credit. I'll try and post the link on the actual video on YouTube, nothing I can do on the podcast. But it was an awesome video of a dad going on a first date. And it was a first date with his daughter. And she must have been 4 or 5. And it was so cute. It's something you don't even think of because you're a parent. You're a dad. Got to get through dad stuff. Let's do that. And it was great to see that this family had decided, you know what, we're going to do something special. And they focused. I don't know who was in the family. I only saw the father and the daughter. But they obviously took the time out to have the father dressed up in a suit, a tie, very nice, went to the front door, rang the doorbell. His daughter answered, and she's in like a little sundress, mentioned that mommy helped me with my makeup, and so cute. They just ate there at the house, but they went on the slides. They did just some goofy, fun things, but it was so cute because it was obvious that he was dedicating time just for her, and you think about how special that is for her. She will always remember that. She will grow up, and in my mind, she will be a very strong woman because she has had one-on-one time with her dad, and they had that special time. She will know how to react and be with men in the future. And I just thought that was a great, great sample, and it's definitely something I'm going to pick on and I'm going to start myself.
Cool. Very cool. Yeah. I remember Sabrina and I have done a daddy-daughter dance before. I don't know if you've done that with your daughter yet.
Not
quite
yet.
The same kind of thing. Yeah, when you get the chance to do that, it's huge. It just is, it's fun to see her eyes light up and to be all dressed up and go out and they even took like a picture like they do at homecoming and prom and things like that. But you're exactly right. I think if you take the time to do that, especially with your daughters, it helps them to see how they should expect to be treated. You know, and that's hugely important.
Well, on the flip side,
awesome.
I'm going to encourage Allison, my wife, to take James out so that he knows how to treat a woman.
That is an excellent idea.
Yeah,
excellent idea.
We've both seen that example of that in our lifetime, just friends and all that. But yeah, that's not how you do it. So
yeah, cool. Well, good parenting win. Excellent parenting win. All right. Well, I think that wraps it up for today. Episode 5.
I think it does. Episode 5.
Cool. Well, it's
international
great.
Audience.
There
exactly.
you go. Right. Our World
Once
Cup
again,
audience.
Had a blast. Oh, don't talk about World Cup.
I know. I knew it.
Bums.
We can't go off on that.
Anywho, yes, episode 5 coming to a wrap. We will everybody again next week. And as always, please, please, please share those parenting wins. share those crazy fails. That's what we really want to hear. Hit us up with questions. We're at info@nerdlocker.com. We are on Twitter @NerdLocker. We're Facebook, Instagram. It's all NerdLocker. So hit us up. Jason,
absolutely.
See you next week, man.
Yeah, it's great talking to you, buddy. Bye.
All right, bye-bye.